Welcome back to a Not a Single Mother podcast with myself, Aislinn Dowling. How are you all getting on? What's the crack? Hope you're all doing well. What's the story? You'd swear I was actually talking directly to someone. Hope everyone is well. I just want to say a huge congratulations to the Kilmoyley boys. Kilmoyley is where I'm from. That's my local club at home. Congratulations to the Kilmoyley boys who have won the county championship again. And I was actually just looking up there to see how many they've won and have they won the most county championship titles in Kerry. And it says the all-time record holders are Kilmoyley and Ballyduff, who have won 25 titles each. So we're nearly there, lads. We're nearly the best. Honest to God, this Kerry accent that I put on, it's myself and Ellis, the girl that I work with. Do you remember I had her on there for 2 episodes and we were saying we do accents, and I've never, she's not even from Kerry, like she's from Glasgow, she's from Scotland, she's not even from Ireland, and she has the best Kerry accent. She has a better Kerry accent, not than I do now, but then most people I know from Kerry are able to do like a strong, thick Kerry accent. It's just hilarious. So we're just constantly doing it at work and I just can't get rid of it then. So obviously I have my own accent, but it's like I'm putting on a thick, like, awful accent. Like, how are we getting on every day? Anyway, enough about that. What other news is there? Speaking of Kerry, you might have seen it on my Instagram or my Facebook or my just social media in general that myself and my 2 friends, Aaron and Brona, who also have appeared on the podcast before more than once, are fundraising for Comfort for Chemo Kerry. So in the month of October, we are walking 300 miles in order to raise as much money as we can for Comfort for Chemo Kerry. The fabulous charity are raising money for a purpose-built standalone facility which will allow sufficient space to treat cancer patients with dignity and respect. So the new facility will be a more private and pleasant place to help patients who are going through their treatment in Kerry. So obviously, like, everyone, I know this is specifically for Kerry, and obviously a lot of people that listen are from all over Ireland and different parts of the world, but obviously a lot of people are from Kerry, seeing as I'm from Kerry, or you may have family in Kerry or whatever. But even if you don't, we'd really appreciate if you could donate, because everybody knows somebody that has been affected by cancer in some shape or form, whether it's a friend of a friend or a family member, or, you know, a family member of a friend, you know, everybody has. And Aaron's mom was diagnosed with cancer this year, so she's currently been undergoing chemotherapy, and she's praised the fantastic staff in KUH. And if this facility was available to her during her treatment, like, the process just would have been a lot less intimidating for her. So if you put yourself in the patient's shoes, I can imagine how daunting it is going into a clinical hospital to undergo chemo. You know, even going into a hospital for anything at all, just kind of, it just makes me anxious. It's just not a nice setting. So imagine how much of a difference a new building with ample privacy and comfort would make during such a difficult time, especially when you're spending so many hours a day there. Like, you could be there for 7 to 8 hours. So anything at all to make that time a little bit easier, because, like, God forbid, but it could be anybody. Sorry, my phone. It could be any of us at some stage, unfortunately, but that may be the case. So, you know, or it could be any of our family members. So anyways, myself, Aaron and Brona will be walking 100 miles each, so 300 miles over the month of October all around Sydney. And we'll be documenting the whole thing, and the link is in my bio if you'd like to donate. We've set our target at €5,000, but obviously we would love to raise as much as possible, so every little donation will be greatly appreciated. This episode of the podcast is proudly sponsored by Coupon Cafe. If you are looking for a taste of home with a modern twist, then follow Sydney's best mobile Irish cafe and grab yourself some wheaten bread, jambons, scones, hot chicken rolls and Barry's tea to name a few. Gary and Eve will be blogging their whole experience on their socials, so make sure to follow Coupon Cafe on Instagram to see where you can find their food truck. They do click and collect orders and they also cater for any parties and events. Whether you're a sunrise or a sunset person, they have you covered with sunrise boxes with scones and caramel slices and sunset boxes with wheaten bread, ham, coleslaw and so much more. They've thought of everything, and if you're looking for a gift idea for somebody living in Sydney, then look no further as they offer gift cards on their website, which I will link in the description of this episode. Thanks so much to Coupon Cafe for sponsoring this episode of the podcast, and make sure to support this lovely small Irish business. So on this episode of the podcast, I am delighted to finally interview the lovely Ciara O'Malley. So she is the author of Miracles Appear When Loved Ones Are Near. You may have seen me post her book on my Instagram stories there weeks ago. I was supposed to interview her ages ago, but there were just a few obstacles in the way. However, finally got around to interviewing her, and oh my god, she's honestly just such an amazing, inspiring person. And even though she's gone through the most tragic event that I could have even imagined, like the love of her life, her boyfriend of 10 years, David, sadly drowned in an accident whilst they were away living abroad in Canada. And basically, she just has told me the story of what happened while they searched for David's body, the months and months that they were searching for him, the months that she was at home, while the search had to be stopped and paused, and how she got through it, basically, and how David was communicating with her throughout that time through different signs. Her book is just so, so interesting. Like, it was really, really... it was just different, I suppose. Like, I haven't experienced grief since, like, in my own personal life since 2012. And, you know, I haven't experienced grief that close to me either, like nothing in comparison to what she went through. So it was just like reading about and listening to her talk about the signs and dragonflies and just different things like that was really, really interesting. Like, I've never really read about that before or heard much about it before or just spoken to anyone about it before. So it was really enlightening. And she's just, honestly, like, it's not a podcast just about a sad story. Like, it's just how it's inspiring for everyone. Like, it's not even just about grieving, even though that's kind of what she focuses on. And she helps people with grieving and how to get to the other side of it. But it's kind of just like, you know, if you're just having any kind of, if you're going through depression or like really, really low periods in your life, which obviously so many people go through, it's just inspiring because she has honestly been through the worst. Like, she's reached the lowest of lows and went through it for years, and she's just at the other side of it, and she just is so much happier. Like, the way she looks at things is everything happens for a reason, and loved ones are always with you and they're always guiding you. It just ends on a positive note, even though it's obviously, the story is really sad, but it just ends on such a positive note. And she's such a nice, like, genuinely nice, caring person, and it's really nice to listen to her. How many more times am I going to say nice? Anyway, I'm waffling on. Like, the podcast explains itself, really. Like, and she tells the story so nicely. And I really hope that you get something from it. But it was a really long episode. Obviously, I could have talked to her for so much longer. But I would really recommend buying the book. You can buy it at home online. And I'll link that because I can't remember it off the top of my head now. And she says it at the end of the podcast. You can also, she said, for people abroad, then you can now buy it on Amazon as well. So Miracles Appear When Loved Ones Are Near is the name of the book by Ciara O'Malley. And yeah, I will go straight into part one. And in a couple of days time, I will upload part two. Thank you so much for listening. And I really hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so, so much. me.
No bother at all. Kira, you are the author of the amazing book called Miracles Appear When Loved Ones Are Near, which is about your tragic story and your journey after your partner David was so sadly taken by a drowning accident in Canada. The book is so interesting and brings you on such an emotional journey from the day of the accident to where you are now today. And there's just so much in between. But can we just start off and just talk about your life with David? Just a little bit about yourself, how you met and what your relationship with him was like.
Yeah, so myself and David, we would have met when we were both in school, teenagers, and would have met at a local concert actually in our local town. And that was it. Then we just, I suppose, fell in love. And we were going out then for a few years. We went to college. And I think we knew then when we got through college together, like, this is the real deal. And then, yeah, we both went working. But we both had a yearning to kind of go traveling. We were kind of thinking, oh, we might go to Canada or wherever. But yeah, we were so lucky. We had just an amazing relationship and time together. And David was just the nicest person in the whole world. And he was mad about football.
Yeah.
he played for Mayo and he played for a local team here.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd get him to go traveling and to move away. But yeah, I suppose looking back now, I'm so grateful for the times we did have, and we loved traveling. So we would have kind of gone to a lot of places in Europe and America and places, you know, so we loved kind of getting away for like a weekend or a few weeks or whatever. But yeah, we went through lots of different stages of life together.
Yeah.
And I suppose, yeah, it was, you know.
Yeah, you'd been together since you were very young. So you were together for, was it 10 years, was it?
Yeah.
And so you decided to go to Canada anyway in the end. You convinced him after all that to go to Canada.
He convinced me then in the end.
Really, was it?
I had given up then. I was like, sure, look, if I get him to go, I get him to go. And then I suppose he just got this thing. He was like, we're going. And I was like, are we? And, you know, that was it then. Yeah. And so, yeah. I kind of didn't believe it in the beginning. I was like, I'm not going to get this fella now away from football.
Yeah. I know lads in the GAA, like, they're so dedicated. They'd be like, and especially because he played for Mayo.
I was his second grade.
Yeah. So what part of Canada did you end up going to, and how was that transition for you?
So we ended up going to Vancouver.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure how we picked Vancouver, but it just felt right, so we went with it. And I think the transition over was, oh, I think we were just so ready and we were so, so excited. And it was so quick as well. I think we had booked it in October, November, and then we went the following February. So it was so, there was no time really to be thinking about it. And when we got there, we're like, right, we're going to enjoy a few weeks and get to see Vancouver. And we did a bit of kind of traveling up around Banff and Lake Louise and up there. And we were just, we were loving our life and we got to see so much. And I suppose even though we were going out together for 10 years, which, you know, is a long time, it was time we actually had spent together. So it was so lovely to have that time, because we weren't working. And, you know, at times when we were going out, David was living in Dublin or Galway, and I was in Mayo, or, you know, like, we were kind of all over the place sometimes. Yeah. So it was just so, so lovely. And it was so exciting to be somewhere new. And we had both said we'd love to live near the sea. And like, literally, we got we found a house and it was beside the sea. So we were like, oh my, this can't get any better. Then we both got jobs that we really liked, and I was like, stop it now, come on, this is just too much. So everything was just aligning and falling into place, and he even got me playing Gaelic.
Stop. Had you never played it before?
So he joined When I was younger, but like it wouldn't have been my forte. Now I preferred going for the crack or looking at the sideline, but yeah. It was a way to meet people. And I'm sure yourself out in Canada or out in Australia, there's such a social side mm-hmm. to it. So
yeah,
I was like, feck it, I'll go and I'll, you know, to meet people. And sure, he used to bring me to the park to teach me how to solo.
If that's anyone's
seen us, any like pure mortified of me like bringing it, and but like he that just showed him, he just said so much patience and like I'd say if anyone was watching it was gas, like, and I'm like, geez, you're not doing that half right, but I think he kind of just let me off. Then he was like, I'll just let her do her own thing.
That's gas. And was it just the two of you that went over together? You didn't go over with any friends or anything?
No, just the two of us. And we didn't actually know anyone in Vancouver either. We did have a friend in Banff and we met them on the way. And so it was lovely to spend time with them. But no, we knew nobody in Vancouver. So it was like, I suppose at times it was a little kind of like, oh my God, we don't know anyone here. But I suppose it gave us the push, you know, as I said, they're even going to play football. I wouldn't, you know, exactly. Like things that you wouldn't have done maybe, you know, in Ireland. And it was so funny because the two of us were adamant. We're like, we're going to meet loads of Canadians now. All our friends are going to be from Canada.
Never.
Do you know, the like way. You have this side that and you're like, we're leaving Ireland now and we're going to meet loads of Canadian people. And we just met the most amazing. I think the whole circle was Irish. Like, yeah. It was lovely, you know.
It's always the way.
Kind of family unit, you know. Yeah.
It's always the way when you go away, you think, right, I'm going to make friends now with all these foreign people and we're going to finally, like, yeah, you know, broaden the horizons. But you always end up in an Irish bar and hang out with Irish people constantly.
In the morning, Irish pub. It's like, are we in Dublin or Galway?
Literally, you fly halfway across the world just to go to another Irish bar. Like, my mom always says that to me as well. She's like, you flew all the ways over there just to go to the Irish bars. I'm like, sure, it's just the way.
There was one night there was Irish music, and I felt like we're more Irish here than we are in Ireland. You know what that kind
of thing? You become more patriotic when you actually leave the country than you are when you're there. It's actually good. So David was obviously very heavily involved in the GAA over there as he was at home. So he went away on a football game, was it, on the day that you found out about the accident. So can you just describe the day that you were having when you found out the horrible news?
So the day, it was actually my birthday and David had gone the previous day. So we had done something and we'd kind of celebrated my birthday. And then that morning I said goodbye to him. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, the day David's accident happened, was my birthday and I was pottering around and I was at work. And I remember actually feeling, I was just in great form and I was so excited because I was celebrating my birthday on the beach with a group of the girls that I had met, all mostly Irish actually as well. So I was just like, oh my God. And you know that Friday feeling as well, finishing work, being off for the weekend. And I had been chatting to David that morning and I was like, I'll chat to you later on. And he was sure, he was delighted. I think at that stage they were on, the tournament was in Calgary, but they were staying in like a local place close enough just for the night. So I finished work and I was on the bus and I was just, you know, like them people that you're looking at them like they're happy out there now there. And I remember trying to ring David and he didn't answer, but I didn't pass any heed. I said, you know what, he's with the lads. The tournament was starting the following day. Mm-hmm. So I was like, they're out the night before, so didn't pass any heed. And I was just literally, I had no cares basically. My biggest thing in my head was, what am I gonna wear? What do I need to get in the shop?
Yeah.
And Jesus, it was roasting that day. It was really warm. So I was like, oh my God, makeup's gonna drip off my face. And I suppose then when I got back to the apartment, I started getting ready and still just had the music on and I was bopping around the apartment. And I think I tried to call David again and I still didn't register with me because I was just like, do you know what? He's off doing what he has to do and I'm sure he'll give me a buzz later on, do you know? Yeah. And I suppose it was only really when my friends who were coming out with me rang me and they said, oh, we're coming. Yeah. And they said, we'll be over at your apartment in a little while. And I remember being like, oh my God, they're early. And like, yeah. they were never early, yeah. but it's still nothing registered with me.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. I was just like, oh my God, they just must be excited as I am. So then when they landed and they came into the apartment and they asked me to sit on the couch, and sure, I was still bopping, and they could feel that as well. So when I think back, I'm like, oh God, I love them. Mm. Do you know, like, it was so, when I opened the door, I was like, oh my God, you're here. Like, and they're like, sit down. I was like, oh my God, they have a present for me. Like, do you know, that's where my head was at. I was like, oh, I'm so lucky. Like, I'm here in a new place with amazing people celebrating my birth. You know, I just felt so just, oh my God, this is amazing. And it was only then, I suppose, when I sat down on the couch and they said these words, and I was like, oh my God. And all I heard was David, an accident. And like, literally, I suppose my whole world, the bubble I had been popping around in the last few hours, just completely burst.
Yeah.
And I don't think when they said it, I didn't hear exactly what had happened. I didn't hear, oh my God, David was involved in a drowning accident. I just heard David accident, and I remember just going straight into the bathroom and closing the door, and I sat on the toilet and I was like, no, this cannot be real. And then I suppose it all came back to me, oh my God, I've been trying to ring David, he hasn't been answering. And it was just sending my body into absolute complete overdrive. And even now when I think back, I'm like, oh my God, them feelings I was feeling, actually, were, thinking back, they were terrifying. It was like my body had never experienced anything like that in my whole life. So I went out then, and I went out off the bathroom, and I was like, I was ecstatic. I was like, what do you mean? And they didn't have much, they didn't have any more real information either. Do you know that David had been with the lads? They had gone to this place, it was a really warm day, they'd gone to this place to cool off, and they were having the crack jumping into the water, and David had jumped in and he hadn't resurfaced. And like, to me, you know, the week before David left, the week before we went to like a local place in Vancouver, and that's what we did. We went and we were jumping in, do you know what I mean? So that's what David did. So I was like, oh my God, oh my God. But I just, the words resurfaced. David didn't resurface. I was like, this is bad, this is really bad. But I suppose that part of you that is like, no, this David's my world, he's my person, he's not gonna go.
Yeah.
No, this isn't happening.
Yeah.
That the part of me that didn't want any of this to be real was like, okay, no, this, we'll ring someone, it's wrong, it's not, you know, this hasn't happened. David is okay. He's gone swimming, and he was actually a really good swimmer. So I was trying to come up with all these things that were like, okay, no, this isn't happening. Do you know? So we did ring someone then, one of the lads who were with David, and I spoke to him on the phone, and I was like, oh my God. And like, just all the words he kept saying, I was like, oh my God, I just wanted him to say, it's gonna be okay, we're here. And he just kept saying, you know, like, we don't know where he is, you were looking for him, he hasn't resurfaced. I was like, oh my God. And then I think it was then when I got a phone call from the local kind of police officer who was there, and I was like, that's when I think I was like, oh my God, this is bad, I have to get there.
Yeah.
Do you know, and yeah, I suppose, you know, we spoke about the, you know, the amazing community out there, and like, thank God, you know, I had made the most amazing friends, and they were there with me, and they're like, here, whatever you want, we'll do. And straight away, you know, it was like, we need to get there, we need to get to and face this head on, whatever this is.
Yeah, when I first heard your story, that kind of, that part of it really struck a chord with me, because obviously being over here, like, and you know yourself, anyone who lives abroad in any country knows that your friends become your family, and the Irish community abroad is always just so amazing. Like, everyone just comes together when there's any kind of a tragedy. So that really just struck a chord with me when I heard that, because I could just imagine what it was like for everyone around you, and even for you yourself. And it was just madness. And for you as well, going from such a high in that day to such a low low just must have been so crazy for you, your mind and your body, do you know?
Oh, I remember thinking for a long time, I was like, to David, you know, and I'm a firm believer now everything happens for some kind of reason.
Yeah.
But I'm like, did I have to feel such a high? Because when everything crumbled, I was like, I honestly believed I will never feel like that ever again. Do you know what I mean? I was like, did it have to be like such a, oh my God, because I even looking back, I really remember how elated I was.
Yeah.
And as you said there, like, you know, the friends were with us. It was like myself and David and two other couples, and we were doing everything together. It was it was lovely. Like, and like they had got to know David so much, and like we were all, as you said, we were like a little molded family. Mm-hmm. And like they were there, and they were broken, like they were heartbroken. They were trying to be so, so strong
of
for
course,
me.
Yeah.
Do you know? And like, I don't know. I couldn't even imagine how I would have even processed any of that without having that support.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, I got messages from people all over Vancouver. I'm Irish, I've come to you. You know that thing within us?
Yeah.
And I think we're really good at that. Being Irish, it's like, oh my God, I'll do whatever.
Yeah.
And like, it was breaking my heart for people to be in like, oh my God, where are you? I'll come, I'll help you. But then there was this like, oh my God, people just want to do anything they to help you in this moment of need, you know?
Mm-hmm. What happened next then? So David and the boys were, it was like 5 hours away or something, was it?
Yeah. So one of my amazing friends had a car. So he was just like, right, let's go. And I was like, oh my God. So literally the four of us packed up in the car. And I remember packing. This is how delusional I was at the time. And my mind was still like, we're going to find him and we're going to bring him home. I packed eyelashes. Like I packed, you know, them individual eyelashes.
Yeah.
And I brought one change of clothes. Like I had not enough what I was going to greet me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, right, we'll find him and we'll get back. I had, you know, just a little tiny rucksack.
Yeah.
So we got on the road, but I suppose before that I just kept thinking of poor David's parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to ring my parents, and you know, like your parents are nearly, they're over alert anyway when you're far away and you're ringing them. And if you ring them at any kind of different time, what's wrong?
Yeah.
So ringing my parents in the middle of the morning, I knew they would be like, oh my God. And I could barely talk the words. I don't know how they got out, but I was just like, you have to go in. I said, David has been in an accident. And I said, you have to go in and tell David's parents. And I suppose, you know, thank God, you know, there was that relationship there with my parents and David's parents, because we had been going out for so long. So they went in and told David's parents. And oh my God, I couldn't. I suppose in my head, I was like, at least I'm here. At least I can get there.
Yeah.
I said, they're getting this information in the nearly the middle of the night over the other side of the world.
Yeah.
So I kept thinking, I was like, oh my God, Jesus Christ. But thank God my parents, you know, they went in and they told them. And we hopped in the car and we drove. And the journey down was just, I don't know, looking back, did it feel like it took 5 hours or 25 hours or else 10 minutes?
Because
there was a bit of me that was like, just want to keep driving, just keep driving.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, I need to get there. And sure, my mind was just, and my body was, the emotions were just, I felt nothing and then I felt everything. And nobody knew what to say because we didn't have the words to process, like, you know, a few hours earlier, everything was normal. We were just getting ready to go out. Like, you know, David was living his best life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was a very, very peculiar just drive with all of the emotions. And then I think halfway up, then I got a phone call from David's dad. And oh my God, that absolutely just broke my heart. Because I suppose it just made it even more real. And I think he was looking for me to give him the reassurance that I was looking for someone else, because I was there and I didn't have any more, you know, information, or I didn't have anything to say to him, this is going to be okay. Like, you mm-hmm. know, I probably did say it, but like, I think we were both kind of deep down, we knew this is really, really bad.
Yeah.
So I suppose when we were approaching the lake, then I remember my stomach, oh, it was just in a heap. It was like, oh my God. Cause like we knew when we were getting closer, I think we had like Google Maps on or whatever, and like, you know, them last 20 minutes it was like, oh my God, oh my God. And there was a sign then down to the place, because I'd spoke to some of the lads who were there and they had said, you know, there's at the end of the road there's this sign. And once we got to the end of the road, I was like, oh my God, like I was like, this is just mad. And I nearly wanted to scream, but like, keep driving, don't go down here. Yeah. Do not go down here. But anyway, the road down was just this dirty, muddy, really track road. Like it was, mm-hmm. I remember a rage kind of coming on me, being like, why would he drive down here? Why mm-hmm. would anyone use this road? There was so many turns. It was like, oh, it was, yeah. And it was really dark and misty. So like everything just seemed so
eerie,
or just like it just seemed like it was just so overwhelming, mm-hmm. do you know? And then when we did get there, the first thing you could see when we did pull up was the bridge, and you could see the lake. So it was like there was no kind of easing us into any of this. It was just all coming at rapid speed, and it was like, oh my God, this is all so, so, so real. And just that, I suppose, that part within me that, oh my God, this is okay. This and it just, with everything I kept seeing, the bridge, the lake, the dirt road, the conditions, I was like, oh my God, please, come on, David. This can't be happening. So then, yeah, I suppose when we got there, you know, our first thing was to get out and walk, you know, to the bridge and look over. And I remember standing there and just falling to pieces, looking out and like being like, oh my God, David was here. Like, this is where, you know, David was very much alive here mm-hmm. a few hours ago. And like, it just was so, so overwhelming. And it's so hard, even, you know, when we're talking here, to process. I suppose writing, I kind of find that easier to kind of get them emotions out or whatever, or to portray how I was feeling, because I was something I never felt before. My body was just, you know, I was just, oh my God, this is, you know, there was anger, there was just, it was distress, I was just heartbroken. And then it was so quiet. There was nobody there. Everyone was asleep. It was a campsite.
Right.
So people were there on their holidays. That's, you know, it was a little camping village, the lake. People used to do their kayaking and whatever. And it was no one there. There was no one searching for David. The whole campsite was asleep. And I just remember being like, oh my God, like, why is nobody searching for David? Like, why is David's missing? He's out here and nobody's doing anything. And I just remember feeling so, so hopeless. And like, you know, meeting all the lads there, and sure, nobody had words. We were just like, looking at each other like, oh my God. But yet everyone was like, we need to do something. Do you know? And I remember ringing some of the services and they were like, oh, you have to wait a few hours. And I was like, wait a few hours? I was like, my partner is missing here. What do you mean? Like,
what did they mean by that when they said you have to wait a few hours?
As in, they had been there, so it was probably about 5 o'clock in the morning at that stage.
Yeah.
And they had thought, they had the search teams out the day before. So say by the time I got there, it was a few hours later. So that evening they had people out searching, and but they went home that evening and then they would not be back that day. I think it possibly could have been 10 or 11 that they landed the next day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, we'll get there. They'll all be searched. There'll be something going on.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be actively looking for David, and nothing. Do you know, a local man brought us out, like, because we were all just like, we didn't know what to do with ourselves, but we knew we had to do something. So I remember we asked a local man who was there, and he was going out fishing. He was going out early, I'd say, before everyone else, because the lake would have got quite busy, like, with tourists and whatever. And we were ecstatic, being like, oh my God, you know, my partner's missing, blah, blah. So he brought us out on the boat. And, like, he had us on his boat, and he'd, like, this thing called a fish finder looking for fish. And we were all staring into this screen looking for what David might look like on. And, like, I remember being like, oh, my God, like, this can't be real.
Yeah.
But it felt better being on a boat doing something than sitting staring, being like, oh, my God, there's nothing going on. So it was kind of frustrating, and it was just like, oh my God, well, what the fuck? Like, how do we deal with this?
Yeah.
And time felt like it was going either really slow or just really fast. And it was just so, so overwhelming. And I suppose it, you know, in a few hours, like, services did come and they did go out, and all we could really do then was wait. Do you know, like, as in, horrible. You know, sitting there, and I remember the sun was, it was so, so warm, and there was myself and my friends who'd came with me, and then a good crowd of the football club who was with David, mm-hmm. and, like, we were all just kind of hurtled in together, just everyone just praying and yearning, oh my God, like, okay, tell us something, give us something, mm-hmm. give us some kind of glimmer of hope that, you know, we might find David today. And that day just felt so long, and that evening it was, you know, we haven't been successful today, we'll come back tomorrow. And oh my God, and I remember praying, I'd be like, please David, because I knew at that stage David's parents and some of my family were planning on coming out, and the day I had spent just staring out of the water, just praying that we would get some kind of hope, or, you know, some kind of something to just give us anything. And I remember like, please David, just don't put your parents or anyone else through this, I'll be here, we'll find you, and we'll just, you know. But I suppose that part of me then that still thought, oh my God, we'll find him alive, do you know what I mean? I think I still was under delusion, even though everything was showing me otherwise. Like, it was very clear and deep, deep within my soul.
Yeah.
I knew that wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was the second day in, one of the police officers said to me, goes, this was always a rescue. This was always a recovery and not a rescue. And I remember my heart I just had a meltdown, because I knew that. But for someone to put the words on what I was feeling, you know, and I remembered that this was always a recovery. And I was like, oh my God. And then I suppose things had to take a turn. I was like, okay, you know, we just need to find David. We just need to find David, rather than we need to find him alive. And that was so hard, because, you know, I was like, oh my God, like, I just want David. I don't want any of this. I just want to go back to Vancouver. I just want, you know, David. And I was praying, and I was like, oh my God, I remember, I'd be like, David, I'll do anything. I'll do whatever. God or whoever's up there at the time, I suppose my spirituality and all that has taken a big turn, you know, since all of this. But back then I was like, I'll do anything. I'll do whatever you want, whatever. Just please, you know, let this not be real. And please just somehow let David be alive and well. And, you know,
of course.
And
how long then were you there until your family arrived and David's family arrived?
I think it was only a few days. They got out as quick. And I think God loved them. Like, I suppose I knew what was going to greet them then. And when they landed, it just felt even more real, you know, because it was like, these are David's parents, sister. And, you know, we were all together, and it was lovely in that sense that we had each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like when they seen me, you know, like the last time they had seen me, even it was they had left. Here and David had gone off there and ventured, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas now here we're at this lake, and I was like, oh my God, do you know? awful. I suppose for me, I was like, at least I had had them, you know, I had the last few months with David. Yeah. And it was just so, so, so overwhelming. And then when they landed, I suppose the search for David had kind of taken another turn, that we had had a dive team out.
Okay.
And the dive team had been searching the local area. And I think it was the day they arrived that they had kind of said to us, or the next day, that we're going to have to call this off. This, they were saying, you know, that we're not successful here, you know, we'll have to call this off. And I suppose at that stage, you know, the outcry of support we had got from Ireland, Canada, all around the world,
yeah,
just blew us away. And, you know, we had heard then that, you know, a GoFundMe account had been set up,
mm-hmm,
and that enabled us to look into, you know, private search teams, because the local, you know, the RCMP or the searching out kind of, they had called everything off. They were like, you know, that we've been unsuccessful here. So I suppose then it was like, okay, you know, we need to up the ante here.
Yeah.
And thank God, I think it was actually the local football team. They had put out, I don't know, emails or whatever. There was so much going on.
Yeah.
And I was just, half the time I was like, I didn't even know whether
someone
are going, but they were like, okay, there's someone coming. There's a crowd coming from Idaho. They're specialists in this. They've been doing this for years. There's another crowd coming from Vancouver Island. So it was like all of a sudden, you know, there was lots more services coming to help. And then there was like people coming from Calgary and from Vancouver who just were coming, and they had boats and they just wanted to help. And I suppose within all the chaos and the madness, there was such this community spirit, as in, like,
yeah,
people are just landing saying, you know, we're here, what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
Like, do you know, there was just, and it was, that was so lovely. And I think,
so
you
nice.
Know, we were so heartbroken, and everyone was, and we were trying to process what was going on, like, but yet there was just people coming in and lifting us up and saying, okay, we're here, we'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
Get the services you need, we'll go out on boats, we'll do whatever. And I suppose, you know, at times it kind of felt like, oh my God, you know, in the morning you'd be all go, you'd be out on the boats, you'd be, you know, searching, and then in the evening you'd come in and there might be nothing, and you might be like, oh my God, and just feel so deflated. We also had, at that stage, we had a canine search team come in, so it was really, there was so much going on looking for David. So I suppose in one sense we felt like, okay, we could not be doing anything more. So do you know, that kind of gave us a little bit of, okay, we're not finding them, but we are doing everything, you know, thanks to everyone who's supporting us. And yeah, I suppose David then, in the midst of it all, because mm-hmm. it was just chaos, like, and it was just so overwhelming. I suppose, you know, I had said there before about how I was, you know, praying or being like, please, yeah, you know, show me, you know. I suppose David started making his presence known in all this. And I suppose I wouldn't have really been into or open to any of this, but there was one day then, that, you know, David would have sent us this massive dragonfly. Myself and his sister would have been, you know, on the bridge where we would have spent a lot of time looking out on all the, just watching what was going on, like, and we would have been quite active in the search as well, so we would have been on the boats. But on that particular day, we're just standing on the bridge, and there was this big blue dragonfly, and it was just like there, and their dragonflies are really quick, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's nothing stopping them, like, they'll be gone in an instant.
Yeah.
But this one was hanging around, like, and I remember the two of us were like, oh, it's like, what's going on there? So we got a little stick and we put the dragonfly on the stick, and sure, we were probably half mad talking to this dragonfly. But I remember something within me being like, oh my God, no, like, this is something.
Yeah.
And then we brought it over and we were all staying, like, we did a little camper van and we were all there. So I remember bringing the dragonfly over and we were all looking at him. We were all like, why is he here? Like, why is he not flying away? And then something within me was sparking, well, this is David, there's something, do you know? And I remember being like, oh my God, whatever this feeling is, I want to feel this, because, yeah, you know, it was giving me some kind of hope and some kind of something that I hadn't really felt the last while. And that evening, then one of the services who were helping us had showed me a quote about Dragonflies. It was like, loved ones from heaven coming down to show us they're still with you. And I remember, nice, like, oh my God, I knew that had something to do with David. Then I found a beautiful poem, and I have it shared on my Instagram, and it's about like how, you know, before the dragonfly is a dragonfly, it's a washer beetle, and it's down in the washer, and it's like saying to all its friends, you know, when I transform, or when I become a dragonfly, I'm gonna come down and tell you. I'm gonna tell you all that, mm-hmm, you know, I'm okay, even, yeah, though it knows it can't go back in the water. And, aww, I remember reading that poem, and it just brought so much emotion. I just knew, I was like, that was David's way of saying, Kira, like, I'm with you. I know what you're all going through is just horrendous. It's a nightmare. But I'm here, and I cannot show you in the physical sense. Yeah. I cannot show you I'm here in that way, but I can use signs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I suppose that gave me something. I remember, like, oh my God, I kept asking Davis for signs. And another sign I speak about on the boat is when I was out on the boat one day, and I remember sitting on the boat, and in my head I was like, Dave, come on, give me a sign. And the Justin Timberlake song kept coming into my head. And I remember being like, oh my God, and I kept singing. I was like, no, come on, like, give me something else. And then I kept going, Justin Timberlake. Then I remember I kept repeating the words, and I was like, oh my God, he's stuck in the timber in the lake. And I remember it was the feeling I got, because, like, I got off the boat, and I remember going up to David's parents and, you know, my family and everyone that's there. And I was like, David's stuck in the lake. He's stuck in the timber in the lake. And they're all like, what the hell? Like, what's going on with this one? Like,
yeah.
So I remember just being like, no, he's giving me a sign. He's giving me a sign. And they're all like, all right, whatever this is doing for you, keep doing it. Do you, yeah, know what I mean? But I suppose, and I'd be big into signs now. And like, it was the feeling I got. It was like David's face, and I'm here and I'm with you. And like, what we were going through was mad. But he would have always, you know, there would have been little things that had happened along the way after I was kind of open to all that would happen. I'd be like, okay, that's David. And I just kept talking to him then. I'd be going down to the water, and I'd be playing music for him in the water. And yeah, I'd be like, come on, David, you know. And I suppose that was giving me hope, and it was giving me strength to be like, David is with me. David is here. He's with us. And I suppose we were there for a few weeks before it got to a place where we had to go home. You know, mm-hmm, it was like, we need to go home and hold a memorial service for David. Because I suppose for us, it was very real what was going on.
Yeah.
But for people in Ireland, you know, that were supporting us and his family and his friends, I suppose we needed to go back and you know, remember David. And,
yeah,
you know, so we agreed to go back. And I remember I was like, I'm not going back. I remember just being like, why would we go back when we haven't found him?
Yeah.
But we had so much, was the search for David then at that stage. We had helicopters then. We still had the canine search team. We'd people out on the boats. Everything was going on, but we were just not getting any closer to finding him.
Yeah.
And the conditions off the lake, you know, it was like all the odds were against us, and we'd find out, you know, there was like a glacier runoff, that the water was really cold. There was like the conditions for diving was really just really challenging. So we went home then, and I suppose really hit home, as in landing back in Dublin, being like, oh my God, I'm back in Dublin, but this time I'm by myself. Exactly. I'm not with David. And I remember just being like, I just want to get this over with, and I just want to come back to Ireland, come back to Canada, and keep searching. And we had a memorial, and the amount of people that turned out, just, oh my God, my heart, I was like, all these people have came out to remember David. And you know, like, we're amazing for funerals in Ireland. Yeah. Like, we really are, you know. And I remember, and I always think back to, you know, when you shake someone's hand and you say sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember standing there with David's parents, and his sister and people shake my hand and be like, sorry for your loss, sorry for your loss. And I remember being like, please God, say something else. And I remember really, because in my head I was like, sorry for your loss. I was like, we're standing here, and it was so weird. There was no coffin.
Yeah.
There was no, all the things
so strange. With
this, you know, we didn't have. So I was like, and my mind then would be like, oh, David's just working in Canada and I'm here, you know.
Yeah.
That part of me was still trying to protect myself. And these people, hundreds, if not, I couldn't tell you how many people shook her hands, but like, sorry for loss, sorry for loss. I was like, oh my God. And it was just, I was like, please just say something else. So in a way I was delighted is the wrong word, but we were all just so eager to get back to,
the search.
To get back to Canada the second time. And the second time was different. I suppose we didn't have, you know, we didn't have as many people as before.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that this time we'd a shorter period. So we went back, I think, was it August? And we knew by the end of September, that was our cutoff point with the lake, because the weather got really cold and
right.
The conditions there would be too hard for searching. So we were very aware the second time when we went back that it was like, okay, we have this period of time to find David. And if we do not find David in this period, we will have to leave Canada and not return until the following year, which could be 7 months. So I suppose that brought a lot of anxiety to us all. So in one way we were trying to grieve, but we didn't have time. We were, you know, we didn't really have time to process, because it was like our purpose was to find David. So I suppose in one way it was like, you know, it kept us going, do you know? And like my mental health was taking a massive hit. But yeah, it was very like, oh, you've got to find David. So we spent them few weeks and we did everything we could, absolutely everything. And it just got to a place where we couldn't, you know, there was nothing more we could do. And I remember we were out searching on the boats, and there was three boats, I think, on that day, and they all brought us in together in the middle. And one of the services who'd been helping us, who had so much expertise in this area, they just said, it's time to go home.
Really?
They were like, there's nothing more you can do this time. And I remember just absolutely bawling and being like, please, 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 we cannot. Because I just kept thinking, oh my God, them few weeks we went home between David's memorial, I found that so difficult, because I was like, I felt so guilty. I was like, why am I here when we should be over there? And I was like, I'm not going to be able to do them few months. And anyway, they gave us a few more days. To kind of be like, okay, right, we'll do a few more days. But at that stage, we knew then, you know, there was nothing more we could have done. So then in a few days, I was like, no, it's time. You have to call off the search and come back. And there was, you know, like, there was nothing we could have even done. Even if we came to Ireland, we couldn't even have boats out on the water then. The conditions, the lake was just off bounds.
Yeah.
So it was really disheartening. It was really, I suppose, traumatic to be like, oh my God, this is our second time we're going home to Ireland without him. And yeah, it was mad. Like, and I remember coming home on that, you know, that journey and really saying goodbye to the lake that time. It was so hard. Like, and I came home and I lived with my parents, and thank God, you know, David's parents live close to me. And I suppose within it all, there was so much love. We were so heartbroken, but we all held each other, you know. And I'm so, so grateful now of, you know, the relationship I have with David's parents and his sister and his family and my family, because like, God, if we didn't have that, I don't know what we would have had. And then suppose the outside community and from the world, everyone was like, they were heartbroken. We were heartbroken, but everyone was heartbroken.
Together.
And they were just like, oh my God, you know, praying, okay, next year. But I suppose for me, it was that time. And when I came back to Ireland, then I was like, what the hell am I going to do with myself? Because I suppose I had a purpose. Our purpose was to get up, no matter how you felt, to search for David. And coming back to Ireland, I was terrified of the time of just thinking, and the time of just having nothing to do, yeah. and your mind being like, oh my God, what if David's, you know, body is taken by animals, and that sounds mad, and even saying that sounds bizarre.
No, but it's something you would think of, yeah.
Exactly what we were up against, and I remember someone saying that to me, one of the search teams, and I remember being like, no, like I was like, can't, you know, but that's really, you know, and it's very hard to, you know, to explain what the lake was like, but it was something, it was like something out of this world what we were dealing with, do you know?
Was and it very large to
Ireland, and people would be asking us, and what, yeah, and I suppose before we left we had helicopters,
yeah,
and I remember going out on helicopter, and I think I went out twice, and I remember I couldn't physically, emotionally or mentally do it, because when I was up there and I was seeing what we were dealing with and where David could have gone, I just was like, I can't. So I just was like, I stayed on the water. And I think a bit of me then always wanted to be close to the water, because I always had this, I suppose this, I don't know, this thing in my head that, oh my God, when we find him, I want to be there. I want to be right there. Of I want to be, you know, that idea that, oh, he's going to look like, you know, he was when
yeah.
I seen him last, and I want to be the one who's there. And do you know, like your mind just plays such tricks on you and, yeah. and keeps you safe and makes up these stories to be like, okay.
That's it for this week's episode. I will continue mine and Kira's chat in the next episode. So stay tuned for part 2 in the next few days. Thank you so much for listening. See you in the next episode. Bye.